So evidently, the novelty factor of the green screen has not yet quite worn off. It has been getting a lot of exercise lately. In the background, once I actually get this into Premiere and get the whole thing rendering, there will be a nice slow motion Gold Coast sunrise. So I've just gone back through my time lapses on my phone. I've done a few time lapses, which were like off my backyard, and they show the sun rising and everything. So I thought, that'll be fun. I'll do that. And then someone will get upset because they'll go, it's not fair, you're privileged because you got sun. Or something like that, because it's in the internet and this is what people just seem to do for some reason. Regardless, I'm having fun with it because what the hell else am I going to do anyway, right? So, moving on to things. Now, there have been a lot of things actually that have happened in the last week. And not necessarily in chronological order here. But one of the things that just popped up across my radar that I got a couple of days advance notice on, but I think is really super cool for everyone, is that Pluralsight is making every single course in the library available free for all of April. That's 7,000 plus courses, 40 something of mine. I can't remember exactly how many there are in there, all free. And it's not free as in put your credit card in here and commit to monthly repayments. And then if you don't like it, you can cancel it. It's like no credit cards, none of that sort of stuff. You can just go in there and get the whole thing for free for April, which is fantastic. Like this is honestly, like if you're sitting at home going, what am I going to do with my time? That is a very good thing to do. So, with my obvious bias, of course. Now, speaking about teaching people cyber things, and of course, Pluralsight is a lot more than just cyber things as well. Or is anything digital cyber now? I don't know. I don't even know what cyber really means anymore. Because now cyber is just like, well, what the hell is there? There's no IRL anymore because we're not doing stuff in person, but let's just call it Pluralsight. So, other things, other security-related things. So I did this video Friday last week. I'm just trying to think about when I would have spoken about this. So what I wouldn't have spoke about is Thursday and Friday last week, Scott Helm and I were doing Hack Yourself First for the Aussie audience. Was it last week? How weird is this? Like I'm honestly losing my mind now. I can't remember what I was doing when. Was it last week or was it the week before? Is it just me or are you getting to this point as well where it's like everything is becoming a blur and because there's no differences between the week. It was last week. Okay. Less crazy than I thought I was. Last week, Scott and I were doing Hack Yourself First for the Aussie audience. And this was on Aussie Friendly Time Zones. We did have a couple of guys from North America as well. So thank you to them for joining in from a very long distance away. It's not the distance that matters, of course. It's the time zone because things would have run very late for them. And one of the things that worked super, super, super well, and I'm going to talk about how we repeated that the last couple of days for Copenhagen as well, was getting to the end of day two, where normally, had we been doing this IRL, which of course we've now established just doesn't exist anymore because everything is digital, had we been doing this, let's say, in person, we would have had some sort of an after party, would have hung around, chatted to a bunch of people, had some beers. So anyway, we went, screw this, we'll do that anyway. So we sat around and bar like one or two people, pretty much everyone hung around for an hour. We drank some beers and we spoke about a whole bunch of different things, everything from the content of the course to general cyber things to, of course, how everyone is getting on in life in general today. And I just felt that it was a very, very happy moment because it kind of felt like we haven't lost the things that are dear to us that we would have done before. We've just kind of shifted the paradigm a little. And it was genuinely good fun. Like people going, look, here's the, you know, the Canadian beer or whatever it was that I've got. And someone else like, you know, I'm having a cup of tea or whatever it may be. Whatever your thing is, no problems. But it was just nice to kind of have that engagement and the casual chat. And by having Slack as a back channel, so we always run a Slack back channel at the same time, even if people didn't want to be on video or didn't want to be on microphone, but they wanted to engage, maybe they're a bit more introverted. Maybe they didn't have a nice backdrop like this one here. Whatever it may be, they got to be part of it as well. So I was super, super happy about that. And honestly, I don't think it's just my general optimism, but I'm just seeing more and more positive sides start to emerge out of all this. So that was that. Now, this week, we were in Copenhagen. So we did NDC Copenhagen. I would not have normally gone to Copenhagen, so it was nice for me to be able to be there at this event because I wasn't planning on being there because I was planning on staying home. So I kind of did both. So we did that. I'm just looking at some of the notes I made here because I sort of jotted some of these down last night. I think I have to talk about them today. And there are a few things that really stood out for me. So one was that we just had really good levels of engagement. And what I'm finding is that the digital medium versus being there face-to-face seems to much more level the playing field in terms of everyone having a voice. Because you know what it's like when you're in any group of people, particularly a group of strangers. There are always people who are more introverted. There are always people who are more extroverted. There is often someone who won't shut the hell up. Is always much louder than everyone else. But this really, really evens out those peaks and troughs of how forthcoming people like to be. So that was one. The other thing that was really good fun is a couple of people there had their kids. And it was like, look, this is obviously you're at home. The kids are in the background, but came up and they'd sort of look into the camera for a bit and say good day to everyone. I brought my daughter up and she was doing the same thing. Scott brought his son in as well, and those kids both know each other reasonably well, so it was fun seeing them talk together. And Scott was doing like the invisibility cloak Harry Potter thing with the green cloth in front of the green screen. And someone actually made a comment in the feedback. They said, look, it was really fun seeing kids there because everyone just sort of had a little bit of a laugh and enjoyed it. So again, like something that we wouldn't have done were we doing this event in person. So that was really good. I made a comment there about the Slack back channel being very highly rated. People were really happy with that. And the lunch breaks we had. Well, so the lunch breaks worked well for me to have beers in because that was about 8:30-ish. In the PM that we finished up for, well, I'll rephrase it. The lunch break in Copenhagen was about 8:30 PM my time. So I sat around by the pool and had a couple of beers whilst everyone else was mostly in the middle of their day because they're in Europe. And again, like just a free flow of banter and discussion. The feedback as well, people were very happy Scott and I doing it together because when we do it together, we obviously have a good rapport with each other and it just makes the whole thing a lot more fun. So that's good. Now, the other thing is, and I've got to make sure I actually add this in, is we are going to be doing the same thing in Porto, in Portugal, in only a few weeks' time. So if you would like to get along to that, there is still room available because we're not constrained by room. So if anyone wants to come along to NDC Porto, that will also be Scott and I doing the same workshop again. We do not have any plans for another one at this stage after that. Now, I'm sure we will do more in the future. We just don't know where they're going to be or under what banner they'll be. But we will be at NDC Porto. I'll link to that. Come along and jump into that. Bring your kids. It's fun. All right. Now, on to more general industry things. And this is, there's sort of two topics here that I want to talk about, which are related and I think deserve a little bit of delving into. Now, the first one relates to house party. Now, house party, where do we start with house party? Let me see if I can actually just find a good explanation of this. House party app. Now, I had heard of house party before, but I've got to be honest, I hadn't really paid a lot of attention to house party. Houseparty.com. House party is a face-to-face social network. Spend time with people you care about. Seems especially relevant right now. Where being together is as easy as showing up. Be together. iOS, Android, macOS, Chrome. It's interesting. No Windows. macOS, but no Windows. What's going on there? Anyway, so house party has been in the news a bit lately. And if I just sort of pick an example here, if I went to Twitter and I searched for house party, it's always interesting to see what the masses say. House party hacked, like this. What are we going to get? Mrs. just DM'd my phone number. It turns out the house party app has hacked my DMs and asked some random lass to come around mine. Suggest everyone deletes it. 6,800 retweets. Who's this guy? Has he got a following? He's got 19,600 followers and he's managed to get 6,800 retweets and 57,000 likes. Me having to delete house party after having fun because everyone's getting hacked. Me deleting house party accounts after seeing everyone tweet about getting hacked. And it's just like house party, hacked, 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 hacked. And there's a really sort of interesting thing worth delving into here. And I want to try and find the tweet. Let's see if we can find this. Here we go. So all these tweets about it. Now, I got up one morning in the week just past and within a very, very short time frame, I had several different people all tweeting me going, hey, have you heard about House Party being hacked? And it's like, suddenly there's this noise. And I'm like, okay, well, this is interesting. It's regardless of what's actually happened, when there's a little bit of a, like an uptick in a trend that keeps coming across my radar and social media, it's like, okay, there might be something interesting here. So, turns out that House Party believes that there is a coordinated smear campaign going on to try and discredit them. Now, I'm going to read their tweet here. We're investigating indications that recent hacking rumors were spread by a paid commercial smear campaign to harm House Party. We're offering a $1 million bounty for the first individual to provide proof of such a campaign to bounty@houseparty.com. $1 million would be nice, wouldn't it? Especially here at the moment because the Australian dollar's kind of tanked a bit. So $1 million, what would that be? Well over $1.5 million Australian dollars. That would be really nice. Anyway, when I first saw discussions about House Party being hacked, this felt very much to me like when you search for, here's a fun thing, right? Do this on Twitter because you got time, right? Just search for Netflix hacked. And you have a read of the sorts of comments that are coming through here. All right, first result here. So someone hacked my Netflix and logged me out. So I called Netflix and cancelled my shit. Selfish ass bitches. I'm literally reading this without having read it beforehand. We both could have been watching movies, but no, someone had to be selfish and change my password. So you know what? Cancelled. No one gets to watch Netflix now. Let me explain this in a way that makes a little bit more sense. You used the same password all over the place. It got leaked somewhere. Someone logged into your Netflix account, changed the password. Now you're deleting Netflix because you use the same password everywhere. And in fairness to this person, Netflix wasn't able to actually stop someone else logging in with that same password. Wow, there's a lot of these. I'm going to read them quickly in my mind before talking any of them. Well, there's a lot of stuff here about get hacked versions of Netflix for free. That's interesting. That might warrant some more investigation later on. Let's just have a look. There's a lot of people talking about a hacked Netflix app. What's this? It's a WhatsApp group that you can join. Sounds legit. Anyway, point is that when you read through these and you have a look at the be careful the way I'm putting this, the way people are explaining Netflix hacked and consider what has actually happened, it's inevitably password reuse and account takeovers. So as it relates to House Party, this to me was the first conclusion that I drew. When people start saying hacked, what they mean is someone else has logged in under my account. Now, of course, it could be that the service has been hacked in the way that you and I would probably normally think about hacked. Maybe they had a SQL injection vulnerability and all the credentials leaked and people are now logging on. But other stuff tends to be very evident as well if that happens, such as account takeovers and all sorts of other places, and people realizing that there's a correlation. So no, this is very much around there's a targeted campaign against an organization. Now, I knew very little about House Party until I sort of started seeing this. And I just felt myself being defensive of them because the language people were using to explain what was happening was a really strong indicator that they hadn't been hacked. Certainly House Party hadn't been hacked, and it was just account takeovers. The smear campaign thing I find really fascinating. And I think that there's an interesting discussion here, and this will lead me into the next topic, about when a service suddenly becomes massively popular in a very, very short time frame, there is a huge amount of scrutiny which is then placed on that service. There's also, of course, now a much greater influx of people using that service, and if the same percentage of people had account takeover attacks as what did before, the noise is still much greater because we've now got a greater number of people actually having accounts taken over. Now, House Party, I have actually had a chat to someone at House Party as well, and they do seem very convinced about this being a coordinated campaign, which is another layer of interest altogether. Because then you'd have to say, okay, well, if it's a coordinated campaign and you've got all of these individual accounts on social reporting that they've had accounts, I think we've got an air quote, hacked, how do you coordinate that? And is there any correlation between those accounts? Maybe I should start looking into this because $1 million would be kind of nice right now. Anyway, well, let's move on to other things because the other one that's been in the news a lot is Zoom. Now, I have been living in Zoom, as many other people have been. This is not necessarily me sitting down going, okay, out of all the different sort of meeting and virtual screen sharing apps and everything that's available, what is the best one with the best security and the best privacy? Oh, Zoom, I'll pick that. It's more because you tend to end up being beholden to the app that others are using. So for example, for NDC Copenhagen the last couple of days, and also when we did the NDC with the Hack Yourself First last week, NDC uses Zoom. Now, I'm not in a position to turn around and go, hey, organizers, you know what you should do? You should get every single speaker to use a completely different app for some reason. Particularly once it's been communicated out to people who've purchased tickets well in advance as well. So you kind of don't have a choice. The other thing is I have so many meetings with organizations, and for years and years have done, where they say, we would like to invite you to a meeting. Here is our app of choice. And it's always either Zoom or BlueJeans or Skype or WebEx or one of these things where it's like, look, this is the way they work. If you want to meet, then you have to use that. So the first thing I want to make clear is it's a bit disingenuous to tell people, oh, just use another app. It's almost like, oh, Facebook doesn't take your privacy seriously. Just use another social media platform. But all my friends are on Facebook. If I go to Friendbook, yeah, for argument's sake, something else that doesn't exist yet, and I go there, I got no friends. What am I going to do? And it's this sort of security utopia again, where it's like something isn't perfect, therefore you should not use it. It's like, well, it's actually more nuanced than that. Now, let's talk a little bit more about Zoom, because they've been in the press for a couple of reasons. So one is around privacy. And of course, when we're talking about a platform where people are sharing their images via video, their voices via audio, their screen shares, and then of course chat as well, that is a lot of content per meeting that's being created and shared, and privacy of course would be something that's very important to people. Now, what's been happening is people have been tearing Zoom's privacy policy to pieces. And I'll caveat this by saying, I haven't read the privacy policy, but I bet you it's pretty much the same as the privacy policy of every other organization doing very similar things. Now, what is then different? Well, what is different is Zoom's getting the scrutiny. So Zoom has suddenly become massively, massively popular. And actually, if anyone knows why Zoom is sort of the one that's just absolutely taken off, as opposed to WebEx or Skype or Microsoft Teams or something like that, I'm actually curious, what is it that gave Zoom that meteoric rise? But whatever it was, it's had that rise, it's had all the eyeballs on it. And again, it's almost a little bit like the house party situation. This is now where all the focus is. So yes, people are picking up things in the terms and conditions which seem concerning in terms of privacy. And I have actually read some of the media reports in terms of the individual clauses. What tends to happen with privacy policies and the likes is, first of all, they're written by lawyers. Now, lawyers, not such good technical people. And believe me, I have some stories about this. Lawyers tend to be very liberal in terms of the way they give the organizations they represent very broad provisions to be able to collect data and use data and do whatever they want. And the terms often look pretty terrible. Now, I've seen enough contracts, particularly over the last year where you will see clauses which can be absolutely ridiculous, but it doesn't mean that they're actually happening. This is not to say Zoom gets off the hook. It's to say there's one thing to see clauses which suggest that there's a lot of wiggle room in terms of the way an organization you know use data. It's another thing to then say, yes, they're absolutely maxing that out and they're abusing your info to yin-yang and back. This is a very different thing. And again, you'll see very similar clauses across other platforms as well. So I'm trying to throw Zoom a bone here because I think that they've just had this massive scrutiny on them for that. The other thing that's coming up a bit is around the security side of things. And you wouldn't believe it, but when a lot of people start looking at the security of one particular application, they find some stuff. again, with no empirical evidence to support this, but just common sense, if it was WebEx, which suddenly became very popular, or let's say it's BlueJeans, because WebEx is a little bit weird Cisco stuff. Let's say it's BlueJeans. BlueJeans has suddenly become massively popular, and everyone starts looking at it and trying to find flaws in their implementation. They are going to find them, without a doubt. And I think what we're seeing here with Zoom is a reflection of just how much scrutiny is now on the app. They're getting a lot of free penetration tests right now. So, again, this is not to say that they get off the hook for free and that, yeah, it's okay to have bugs. This is not that at all. What it is saying is that this is what happens when you get a lot more scrutiny on it. And don't think that going to BlueJeans or something like that, you're going to have a more secure or more private experience. What we may well see happen as a result of this is that they actually get a lot better than the other ones because they have had so many free penetration tests. Now, this brings me to Actually, let's talk about one more Zoom-related thing, and then I'll talk about their blog today. Zoom bombing. We have a new word. We didn't have Zoom bombing only a few months ago. Certainly not as a word like this. So, the basic premise here is people are trying to have a Zoom meeting. It is obviously a publicly facing service. There is an ID for a Zoom meeting, which can be shared. That is discovered by people or inadvertently shared with people who shouldn't have it, and then all sorts of other people join in. Now, there's I read an interesting piece this morning about what Zoom bombing sort of looks like. This is a bit by Catalin Campano. I should link to that somewhere here as well. In fact, I did link to it here. Here you go. It's on ZDNet. The internet is now rife with places where you can organize Zoom bombing raids. So there's things like Discord channels being set up where people are just organizing themselves around, hey, let's find a Zoom meeting that we can go and bomb. And in Catalin's story here, he has some examples where it's like kids coordinating, hey, I'm in one of my English class at the moment. I don't like my teacher. Here's the ID. Can you come and Zoom bomb it? So, couple of thoughts on this. I actually went to YouTube and I found a channel that has a lot of Zoom bombing in it, and I watched one of the videos just out of curiosity. And I got to admit, like, I am torn on the emotion of some of this, because there were some things in there which were kind of funny, particularly when people took over the pen control and things like this. But as I started watching it in this particular video, then got to the point where you had probably about 20 people on the screen. Their demographic look like they're probably in their 60s or 70s, probably like less technically savvy people. Clearly, they're stuck at home. They are going to be in a higher risk demographic in terms of catching the flu and all this sort of stuff. And they're just trying to talk to their friends. And it just feels like super, super shitty that people are trying to disrupt something which is bringing people joy in such a hard time. So I really hope that this is the sort of stuff that Zoom starts to get on top of, and they have absolutely acknowledged this, and they do provide people with tools to be able to try and make sure that stuff doesn't happen. Now, thinking through it further, it's almost like a perfect storm of events, right? So have a think through it. Zoom has had a massively, massively high growth rate. So this is a comment in their blog post, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. So they've said, to put this growth in context, as of the end of December last year, the maximum number of daily meeting participants, both free and paid, conducted on Zoom was approximately 10 million. In March this year, we reached more than 200 million daily meeting participants, both free and paid. So they have grown 20 times since the end of December. If they had doubled since the end of December, that would be big. They've grown 20 times. So yeah, like, first of all, good on those guys. They've literally just been at the right time and the right place and this sort of stuff. But they've grown really, really rapidly. They clearly haven't had the time to plan this growth in a way which would be more sustainable. That's number one. Number two, you've then got a lot of people out there who are not technically savvy, who are trying to jump on board these platforms and don't understand basic things like access controls. Not only that, but a lot of people, I dare say the demographic I saw in that video before, would not be expecting people just to come along and be dicks and try and mess up their meeting. Imagine this in real life. Like, imagine you've got a table of 20 people sitting around, all trying to have a cup of tea and enjoy their company, and some kid comes running in and starts drawing on the table and shouting obscenities at them. You know, like, this is the IRL equivalent of that. So, massive growth, unsophisticated user base, and then all the kids are at home. Right, so you've got this demographic that likes to wreak havoc, and look, we all wreaked some degree of havoc when we were kids. I just wasn't there at a time when we had Zoom and I could do this sort of stuff. But we've got all these kids who are now sitting at home. I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world, but as of this afternoon, we're on holidays for 2 weeks as well. Kids aren't allowed to go out anywhere. They won't have any structured learning or anything like that, other than me making them do coding all day. So this is what is going to happen more and more and more. And this is why I'm saying it's sort of in a perfect storm. Now, Zoom, to their credit, are recognizing all this, and they are obviously scrambling to try and make things better. And I thought it was a pretty well-written blog post, what's in here. So there's a lot of stuff around the privacy side of thing. I mean, one of the things that was pointed out very early on is apparently there was a Facebook SDK in the iOS client, so people are like, oh, they're siphoning off all the data of Facebook. So they made the point here on March 27, we took action to remove the Facebook SDK from our iOS clients and have reconfigured it to prevent it from collecting unnecessary device information from our users. One interesting point on here as well is somewhere here, when I read the post in full before, they made the point that, look, Zoom was largely used in a professional capacity, in a corporate capacity. And now you've got normal everyday people. Like, my daughter was having a long Zoom meeting with a friend. She's seven. Long Zoom meeting the other day with a friend, like just playing cards and stuff with video on each other. Fantastic, beautiful. Not exactly what they had in mind when they designed the platform. So clearly they've just grown really massively. And I think the thing that actually upsets me most about the commentary around Zoom is that here we have a platform that is bringing people together in a really, really difficult time. It's doing it for free for most of these people. And it's giving them mechanisms to cope with just an absolutely unprecedented situation. And I guess I'm just a little bit upset when I see people being negative and derogatory to the organization on very circumstantial information. And clearly they are doing their best to try and work on this as well. And just for absolute transparency, I've not spoken to anyone at Zoom. I don't own any Zoom shares. I have no financial interest. I've never done any work with them. But I'm really sympathetic when I read posts like this from Eric Yuan, the co-founder and CEO, where they're trying to do the right thing. And his final comment here, I think, sums it up. Together, let's build something that can truly make the world a better place. So I would like to see them do that. I'd like to see Zoom go from strength to strength. And of course, I'd like to see other providers out there be successful as well. All right, so that's my feelings on Zoom. I think we're overblowing it a little bit. And what we need to be doing is working to make these guys successful and hoping that everyone can actually still have these face-to-face meetings in whatever capacity face-to-face actually looks like these days. Now, the next thing, oh boy. Where do I even begin on this one? I still have the watch. Let me just grab the watch. Let me walk behind the Gold Coast sunrise just for a moment. And here it is. All right. The Gator Watch. The Gator Watch, which gets branded as the TikTok Track Watch. It is a chunky beast, this one. I wrote in April last year, almost a year ago now, it was about the middle of April last year, about how kids' tracking watches had some pretty serious flaws. So this is an internet-connected watch. It takes a SIM card. In fact, it's a very, as I said, a very chunky beast because it takes a physical SIM in the back. So you've actually got to pop the flap off the back and you can see there's a SIM in there. Now, you strap a GPS-enabled internet-connected device to your kids, made cheaply, sold cheaply. What could go wrong? So what did go wrong is they had insecure direct object references. It was trivial to pull the location of any other child. It was trivial to relocate the child. It was also trivial to set yourself as a parent and then make phone calls to the child, which, of course, is not what you want happening to your child when you're buying them a device which is actually meant to keep them safe. Now, that all happened in April. Discovered by a mate of mine, Ken Munro, in the UK. Ken is from Pentest Partners, super top bloke, very, very smart guy, very, very responsible and ethical in the way he deals with all of the IoT things he finds as well. So it was disclosed responsibly to TikTok Track. They actually took the service offline. They remediated the service, went back online, made a lot of reassurances that everything would be fine. Now, let me give you a little bit of context as to the reassurances, because this will then start to explain the angle that I took with this blog post and the other stuff that's ended up in the news today. Kids tracking watches have come under the spotlight many times before. So before TikTok Track, there are many other instances. In 2017, Ken did a bunch of work with the Consumer Protection Council in Norway, found a huge number of issues with kids tracking watches there. Got a lot of press. Norwegian government said, stop using the watches. It's dangerous. All this sort of stuff. TikTok Track was just one other thing along the way. And then there are others. So, for example, Graham Cluley wrote, let me see the actual post here. This is all embedded in my blog, by the way. Chinese children's watch reveals location and data of thousands of children, November 25. Now, I quote tweeted this and I said, this follows the findings that Ken Munro and I made earlier this year re TikTok Track, which followed findings of his on other kids' watches before that. This pattern is alarmingly predictable. And what I was trying to say there is pretty clear, right? Well, we keep seeing this happen with kids' tracking watches. TikTok Track had, I don't know if rebuttal is the right word, slightly different view on things. And they responded, November. November 27. They said, TikTok trackers invested heavily in ensuring we remediated any findings from April and are committed to working with industry experts to ensure we are mitigating any risks. And they then linked to a piece here, Cyber Update TikTok Track. Now in here, they talk about things like, if I've got one quoted paragraph here, it sort of sums it up and puts into context what comes next. They said, in the following months, iStaySafe, now this is the company that runs TikTok Track, made significant investments both financially and by allocating staff resources to conduct a comprehensive penetration test of their software platform, mobile application, sales website, all APIs. Why is there an apostrophe after A, after the I, before the S? Anyway, it's a grammar thing. An entire systems architecture. This investigation was conducted by a third-party Crest-certified cybersecurity firm based in Brisbane, which is just up the road from me, where TikTok Track are based, to ensure that iStaySafe and subsidiary TikTok Track has the best practice cybersecurity and risk management protocols in place. Now remember, this was shared in response to me saying this is an alarming pattern. Less than 2 months after this tweet, when I was in Norway doing an in-person event, someone reached out to me and said I can access all the TikTok Track's data, including yours. Here's your data. Now, what had happened is, as far as we can tell, this was a regression bug. So the original bug, which had allowed you to manipulate an ID in the URL, had returned. And a fellow Microsoft MVP by the name of Gordon Beaming in South Africa had discovered this. In fact, he discovered it because he was looking at whether or not the watches would be safe for his kids. He searched for it. He obviously found my piece on it and thought, oh, I probably should take a look at this. And then he found this bug. And it's kind of worse than this as well, because in his piece, so he wrote a blog post about this a couple of weeks ago, he shows that there is a path to an API. It's got a query string on it. The query string says filter equals, and then we've got this OData query. Family identifier space EQ space, in his case, 4236. And he posited that if you were to, you're going to be careful the way I say this, but I think he's been pretty clear about what happened in his blog post anyway. If you were to remove the filter, would anything be filtered? So would you only get that one family ID or would you just get everything? Turns out it's the latter. So all of the data was displayed to him. And in fact, the quote that he's got here in his blog post is, he says, I thought, what happens if I browse directly to that container without any filter? This pulled to my browser every user in their system, including me, because I was still there. And I did register with all my legit information, my proper name, my email address, my mobile phone number. So he got in touch with me. I got in touch with TikTok Track. They got details of the vulnerability and they fixed it. Now, this was in January. And not a lot happened after that. They do actually now have a vulnerability disclosure policy. In fact, they did after the first incident. They gave that to Gordon. The disclosure policy does say, look, I think from memory, give us a month after discovering an incident before you write about it, which Gordon did. He wrote about it. Yesterday, a journalist here in Australia, Jeremy Kirk, who does a lot of InfoSec stories, I've done a bunch with Jeremy in the past, he also wrote about it. And what he actually spoke about here is, he said, Australian kids smartwatches maker hit by same bug again. And there's a... Let's actually do this. Let me talk about my blog post, because I've taken a different angle, and then Jeremy's thing. So, look, my blog post was really around assertions of security prowess. So I titled it, Reassuring Words and Good Intentions Don't Mean Good Security. And where I was trying to go with this is that time and time and time again, we have organizations say, trust us. Here's why. Trust us because we have a firewall. We do penetration tests. Our developers have had training, which is good. Do training. Come to Porto. You know, all this sort of stuff. But words, you know, words, reassuring words. And in fact, I noticed even on TikTok Track, that blog post I was reading before, or that news web page, whatever you want to call it, the one talking about Crest Certified, etc., the contact information was a PR company. And some people have already made the comment after I published this blog post this morning. They said, look, this is really, really PR speak. This is not something that has any sort of functional value. It's people trying to spin something in a positive light. Words on pages. So this is the point I wanted to make. And there, look, I'm not happy to see them have this issue again because personal data, including my own, was exposed. And frankly, I don't think they know how far it was being or who's been exposed to, who's seen it all for how long. We weren't able to get anything conclusive on that. So I'm not feeling real happy about it. But there's a bit of me which is, I told you so. Told you so. And that is in relation to this tweet thread where I'm like, look, this is a pattern. And they're like, yes, but we've been tested. Well, yeah, here we are. So I wanted to write this because I want it to be here for the next time an organization comes along and says, yes, but we take it seriously. Their words. Now, Jeremy's angle here. Jeremy wanted to talk about disclosure. And in particular, the fact that there has been no disclosure. And this worries me. So he's got a quote from me here. Troy Hunt, an Australian data breach expert. I'll take that, that's reasonable. Who was involved in examining TikTok track the first time it had a bug, says the norm for situations like this one is for public disclosure statements that describes how long the bug existed. So the expectation we have as an industry, and then depending on where you are in the world, you may have a legal obligation as well, is that after there has been data exposed to an unauthorized party, which is what has happened, that first of all, there is disclosure to the individuals to say your data was accessed by someone. Here's what we know. Here's what the impact is. Here's what we're doing. Here's what you should be aware of. Plus, here is how it happened. This is when it first happened. And you should be able to find that from obviously logs in source control repositories and deployment logs. This is when it was fixed. So this is all transparency. And I've said many times before that we're getting to the point now with data breaches where it's less about the public is judging organizations, less based on the fact that they had a breach and more based on how they handle the breach. And that is a really, really, really important thing. All right, so down here I've said the industry expectation when personal information is accessed by an unauthorized party is that those impacted are promptly notified, Hunt says. Depending on jurisdiction, disclosure to the local regulatory body may also be required. Now, further down, this is what worries me a little bit more. The bug wasn't just limited to exposing personal account data. Ken Munro, a partner at Pentest Partners who was involved in the disclosure of this incident as the first one, says it could have been possible to modify the reported locations of children. The bit that I'm interested in down here is the CEO's response. Now, just to be clear, the CEO, Karen Cantwell, has the best of intentions. I've got absolutely no doubt about that. She absolutely wants to do the right thing. She wants to create a watch that helps parents who are worried about their kids. So intention, top notch, no problems with that. It's the execution and the comments which worry me more. So, for example, Cantwell, CEO of iStaySafe, says the data exposure does not need to be reported under Australian law nor under the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation. And that worries me a little bit because it's one of these situations where what if you were to ask the individuals? Now, okay, I am exceptional insofar as I live in this world and my expectations are different. What if you were to go out to the mums and dads and say, someone else who wasn't meant to have access to it, accessed your data. They say they haven't kept it. They say they've deleted it. But they got to see your data. They got to see your name, your phone number, your email address. They got to see the names of the devices you have, which is usually your kids' names. So my daughter, Elle, her name was exposed there as well. We also don't know when the bug was introduced and we don't know who else accessed it. Would parents want to know that? I think the answer is going to be an overwhelming yes. So Karen continues. Cantwell maintains that no one else aside from Beaming and Munro accessed data this time around. Nothing here to establish how that conclusion was drawn. I'll just leave that there. Our product has not exposed personal data to anyone other than two ethical hackers that brought and issue, I think there's a typo on Jeremy's behalf there, or maybe hers, and issue to our attention, she says. I'm sure you would agree that no one is immune to attempted hacking. Now this is a bit more worrying because what is the point of that comment? I'm sure you would agree that no one is immune to attempted hacking. Now, look, I have attempted hacks every single day against Have I Been Pwned? attempted happens all the time. And I will also acknowledge that it is possible that someone would actually breach the system one day. So I agree. I would not be immune to it. If it happened, I wouldn't turn around and say, well, look, I'm sure you agree, lots of people get hacked. Because that's intended to downplay the significance of the incident. And that worries me. Now, I wrote years ago about Breach Disclosure 101 and about how well the Australian Red Cross Blood Service did it when it happened. And there was a lot in there about owning the problem. Regardless of how it happened, whether it was a regression bug, who the developers were, what the process was, whether you got pen tested or not, you are accountable for the security incidents that happened to your software. You've got to own that. You can't just go, yeah, we got hacked, but they were really good and everyone's getting hacked. Finishes off here. What our customers are confident of and is evident by their continued use of our products and services is that we employ all possible measures to ensure we mitigate risk wherever possible and maintain data security. Possibly. All possible measures. The thing is that they weren't enough. And this is where I'm hesitating. You know, it's again, that they're words of reassurance, but evidently they weren't sufficient. Now, one last thing here. So keeping in mind the fact that they have consciously elected not to disclose. They weren't going to disclose this publicly. Now, we'll see what happens today and into next week, because now, of course, it is public. But mind you, it's a bad news week anyway. People are focused on a lot of other stuff, so maybe it will just fly under the radar. But in my blog post, the last statement here, it's a quote from their page I mentioned earlier on. And it says, iStaySafe will continue to operate in an open, transparent, and honest manner. And I'm just not sure that that's consistent with the decision to not disclose. So that worries me. That worries me. Now, what'll be interesting moving forward is, will we see any statements from them that address this? So will we see any statements along the lines of, well, we're going to get penetration tests done and, you know, make sure it's okay, because we've been down this road before. And the question which really needs to be asked is, given that it's happened once, you took it seriously, you did a whole bunch of stuff, and it's happened again, what is to stop it from happening a third time? And I just don't know that there's a good answer to that. The other thing is, I mean, just tangentially to all of this, who's tracking their kids these days? I know exactly where my kids are all the time. Downstairs, because where else are they going to be? They're not at school, they're not out, they're not doing anything else. And I don't mean to make fun of it and laugh, because their business, like so many other businesses, is really going to suffer with this. But I just can't see anyone buying kids tracking watches at the moment, because there's just not the need. Anyway, that was that. Last thing, blog sponsor for the week is Chronicle from Google, redefining security analytics. You can click here, which will be a click down there on my blog post, to learn about the platform designed for a world that thinks in petabytes. So big thanks to Chronicle from Google for sponsoring me again. I think this is now the third week that they've been on my blog, and I do have a very healthy pipeline of sponsors on the blog in the months to come. So thank you to everyone for that. So that is where we are this week. That went exceptionally long. I'm going to have to make sure I stretch out that sunrise. So right about now, we should see that sun right up in the burning sky, which is pretty consistent with what is down there. I do feel enormously fortunate to be in this part of the world where it is summer at this time of the year when we've got people getting sick, but also to be in a place where we've got a lot of room and water and all this sort of stuff. And my life these days is pretty consistent with what I would like it to be. Anyway, you know, there are obviously a few different restrictions which do change things, but we are very fortunate to be in this part of the world and to be able to be here at this time. And I hope wherever you are that life is not too difficult, and maybe it's actually giving you a few upsides, like the folks last night able to come and join my workshop with their kids around as well. So thank you very much for watching. I know this one's been a bit longer, but there was a heap of stuff I wanted to get off my chest on it, and I will see you next week.